Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome everyone to this extraordinary day in American foreign affairs. It's Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden. President just finished up his talk to the American people, but our show is brought to you by
americascitizenpress.com, a great website for conservative voices. As a matter of fact, I recommend they got a great column by Tom Tancredo on their site now. We'll have him on Wednesday to talk about it. And also Dr. Julie McCallan with Denver Cynegetics. As you said, Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, truth straight up. Unlike the Biden administration, we try to give you the truth straight up here.
He said he'd always told the American people to be straight up
with them. Straight up with them. So the Biden administration, truth straight up, not. Hey, I want to remind everybody, we're going to have Robert Spencer on here in a minute from Jihad Watch. And while we're waiting for him, remind you that we have been banned by YouTube. That's been a while now, but you can get us on Rumble.
You can get us on the Taliban channel.
The Taliban, yeah, and he'll just
They're probably a little more
Well, no, here's the thing. Exactly. So here's what's happening. So Trump obviously is banned and suspended for from Twitter, the Taliban they have their account, so that's all working great. That's insanity. You know, while we're waiting for Robert, we could talk a little bit. We have him. Never mind.
Right,
we were going to talk about the president's speech, but let's just jump right into it.
There.
Robert Spencer with Jihad Watch. We've interviewed him for years. A Middle Eastern
more propitious expert. Time. I can't imagine for having one.
When I booked you, Robert, on Friday, I was saying they aren't going to last till Monday. I was off by a day. let me just start with a really general question. First, thank you for your time, but just your overall take on the events.
The whole thing. Did you get to hear the president's speech also?
Unfortunately, no. I was actually on another show, but I've been reading about it on Twitter, and I see nothing really surprising. More passing the buck, more evasion of responsibility, more blaming Trump. The reality is Trump would not have allowed the military to be so taken over by woke political correctness and leftist ideology like critical race theory as Biden has. And so instead of allowing the military to get all involved in that, he would have made sure that an exit strategy was in place to protect our personnel and our weaponry, and make sure that it all got out safely. There's just no doubt about that whatsoever. And this thing was botched because the United States Pentagon under Biden vastly overestimated the power of the Afghan government and the loyalty of the Afghan people to the Afghan government. I've been pointing out for years that the Taliban is popular because it holds to Islamic law and the Afghan people want Islamic law, and that the Afghan government wasn't going to last 5 minutes after the Americans left. All this proves to be true, but nobody believes this sort of thing in the State Department, and we're paying the price today.
Well,
if I had to sum up the president's speech, it was basically he said, the buck stops with me. I did a great job.
I might have
had a couple timing issues. This always happens in these things when you're surrendering countries, but he's quite pleased with himself.
Right, and his decision, he completely avoided, he said, well, I made the right decision to get out of Afghanistan, and he's getting pretty much lambasted in the media, even by CNN. So everybody's saying, it's not the decision to get out that we're worried about. It's like watching the catastrophe, people dying live on TV in front of us at the airport, the disastrous consequences.
Well,
let me back you up so people can understand. If you were advising the military, from what I read, the Taliban has been going around, particularly since Joe Biden specifically announced when we were going to be getting out, and they've been brokering deals with local people, which is essentially what they do. That's how they work,
right? They're all Pashtuns or Tajiks or lots of other things, so there are lots of cross-familiar ones. It's not like there's just the Taliban one side of government the other, families have members who are part of both and everything else.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. And it's been widely reported that the Afghan government forces in many areas of Afghanistan welcomed the Taliban coming into various cities and towns and said, assalamu alaikum, handed them their weaponry because they didn't view them as enemies. It was all just part of the realities of the American presence there. But with the Americans gone, they could go back to the system that they want, which is essentially the Taliban.
Right. Let me, you know, I'm going to give Thomas a heads up because they said we play the sound later. But Thomas, I want to play that CNN reporter sound in a second, because I don't know if you saw this. This is a CNN reporter.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, this sort of entirely sums up the, there's only one word for it, I think, anymore, the stupidity and the incompetence of the Biden administration. And I think any American administration or State Department or whatever that thinks that these people are going to play friendly with us. Can we please, Thomas, play? This is a CNN reporter in Kabul this today, I think, reporting. Can we play the CNN reporter soundbite, please?
They're just chanting death to America, but they seem friendly at the same time. It's utterly bizarre. At the presidential palace, the Taliban are now guarding the gate. They say they're here to fill the vacuum left when the government fled. But the welcoming spirit only extends so far, and my presence soon creates tension. They've just told me to stand to the side because I'm a woman.
And notice that she's wearing the hijab, too. 2 days ago, she wasn't. I mean, to me, Robert, that just sort of sums up this reporter saying, oh, they're very friendly. I mean, what do you make of that? And I guess the ignorance that it shows.
Well, it's just monumental. It's off the charts, the ignorance. She doesn't realize that they're friendly in the first place because they know she's on their side. They know she's going to report about them favorably. They know that she's already submitted because she was wearing Western dress just yesterday in reporting, and today is in a hijab. And so that submission is what they want. They are happy because they've just won and maybe friendly for the moment, but this doesn't blunt their objectives. And their objectives include the systematic and institutionalized degradation and subjugation of women, including and as well as many other groups. And consequently, it's just incredibly myopic and stupid to say, well, they seem nice, but it shows how shallow CNN's analysis is and how it really is not just even CNN, it's the entirety of the establishment media in completely misapprehending what Islamic law is all about, what the Taliban is about, and so on.
Well, let me ask you this. I haven't quite figured this out. And all the people on top of the trucks are Taliban pushtuns. And I'm not sure whether they put on top of the trucks their best-looking guys, but they all look like George Harrison circa 1971 or something. You know?
Are they central casting terrorists, jihadis?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a good-looking group in general, but they all look like George Harrison. They all look quite attractive, looking people, and maybe that's just the push tunes, or maybe you have to stay in the truck if you're ugly.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that this group is constantly underestimated, and they are media savvy. If you look at Al-Qaeda and ISIS, who were two of their allies, they just freed thousands of Al-Qaeda and ISIS prisoners that were in jail in Kabul. You look at them, they produce these very slick publications, online magazines that are very clearly highly professional. And so it wouldn't surprise me in the least if they're putting their best-looking fighters out front for the Western cameras. They want to win hearts and minds as much as anybody else.
Yeah. Well, let me explain a little bit. That's probably not as hard to do as people think. We saw this, was it during some of the Arab Spring or something, where you watch the reporters and they all have a little bit different angles. But if you get a wide shot, they're all basically standing at the exact same place. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get a media message across, you only have to go to one place. It's not like you kind of just randomly, because it's really not safe to be wandering around, right? So they're in very specific places, probably all of them clumped together. Can you?
Well, what's going to happen now? Is Afghanistan going to break into a civil war with the Pashtuns versus the various other groups? Or is the civil war going to expand from Afghanistan over into other Pashtun territories like Pakistan?
I think that it's not primarily ethnic based. The glue that holds Afghanistan together right now is Islam and Islamic law. The Taliban has loyalty from other groups besides the Pashtuns, and so I don't see Afghanistan breaking up. I think it's going to maintain itself as an Islamic emirate for the foreseeable future, and that the Taliban will begin now to export jihad activity outside the country, as it did, of course, most notoriously on September 11, 2001. Now, they've already agreed with China. They're not going to bother them in regard to the Uyghurs. This is because the Chinese they regard as strong, whereas they view the Americans as weak. And in Islamic law, which always guides what the Taliban does, you don't mess with an infidel foe that is impossible to beat. So they'll play ball with China for the moment, but I think you're going to see more jihad activity in India, for example, from the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Let me ask you this, and maybe let's back us up a second. Can you, can you kind of clarify, and just kind of, I know it's lengthy, but briefly explain, so you got Taliban, you've got ISIS, you've got Al-Qaeda. I mean, what's the difference? What are the similarities? I mean, what are we, help us understand what we're dealing with here.
Sure. Well, these are all different jihad organizations that arose in different historical circumstances. Al-Qaeda, of course, goes back to the 80s and 90s. It was actually officially formed in the 90s, and Osama bin Laden declared jihad war against the Americans, and it's an international group that still continues. The Taliban worked with them in training Al-Qaeda operatives for the 9/11 attacks. The Taliban is specifically an Afghan group that has not operated outside of Afghanistan, although it has received a lot of aid from Pakistan, from the government of Pakistan, as a matter of fact. Even the famous moderate Benazir Bhutto funded the Taliban in Afghanistan for geopolitical reasons relating to Pakistan's relationship with India. And the Taliban, however, shares the same worldview as that of Al-Qaeda. That's why they worked with Al-Qaeda. The same goals, ultimately, of imposing Islamic law for the Taliban, first in Afghanistan and then in the rest of the world. ISIS is an offshoot of Al-Qaeda that arose from a split in Al-Qaeda in Iraq in the early 2000s when Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who was the head of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, wanted to start a caliphate, an Islamic emirate, an Islamic government in Iraq. And Osama bin Laden said, no, if we do that, the Americans will come and topple it. And so Zarqawi split from Al-Qaeda. He was killed not long after that, but ISIS is his group. And they, of course, started their caliphate in Iraq and Syria, and it was toppled by the Americans under Trump, although now it's coming back. They control 10 villages in Syria. They control some territory in Iraq, and I think we're going to hear more from them in those regions.
Well, I heard an interview with the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Khan, the other day, and he's an international cricket star. And as you can imagine, his English is quite impeccable, and his thought process is very kind of attuned to American or Western Europe kind of thought. And he was seemingly highly intelligent. He says, well, if you want to make a deal with the Al-Qaeda or the Taliban war in particular, you should have done when you had 150,000 troops in there, not when you had 1,500. He said, you're not going to get much of a deal then. And he says, it didn't. So he says, I'm not really sure who does the thinking over at the State Department, the U.S. State Department, to blame us for everything. He says, you know, we have our problems and we have our different interests and views and so forth. But just to blame us is a little short-sighted. And he seemed to be fairly logical.
What?
No, there's no doubt about that. Khan's absolutely right. This may be the first time I've ever agreed with Imran Khan, and I hope it's the last time. But he also is working strictly from Islamic law. Islamic law teaches this, that you make an accord with the infidels only under two possible conditions. One is if you are losing and you need time to gather strength to fight again more effectively, or if you think that the enemy is going to become Muslim. Those are the only choices in Islamic law for making a treaty with non-Muslims. And so Khan is saying essentially that if the Americans wanted to make an effective treaty with an Islamic group like the Taliban or an effective peace there, they should have done it from a position of strength, because that would be something that the jihadis would actually understand and honor and understand that they could not deal with this fighting force that was so strong. And so they would make an accord with it, just like they've just done with China. But when the Americans are weak, then they think we don't need to make an accord. We're not losing. And
right.
So it's all based on the Islamic law that the State Department completely ignores.
Well, the Islamic law seems to be kind of based on common sense a little bit. And I don't know where
to a tremendous degree.
Yeah. I'm not sure where our thinking comes from exactly, but it does not seem to come from that well of common sense. It seems to come from almost a ironic view.
What about a two-part question? One is, so, you know, the Western media, this idiotic, in my opinion, BBC reporter was like, hey, the Taliban called me when I was live on the air, and they assured me that they're going to be nice to women, girls can still go to school, they're not going to go door-to-door, although apparently they are going door-to-door now, no revenge killing, anything like that. They seem to mean it this time. First part question is, how likely is that to happen? What do you see happening to the people in Afghanistan, particularly the thousands of Americans and the people who helped America still there?
Those nice NGO girls groups.
Yeah, and then the second part, in terms of, I know the military chiefs are now saying, you know, maybe we should step up our concern about terrorist attacks. How do you see all of that unfolding?
Well, there's no doubt in the first place that there are going to be more attempts at jihad terror attacks in the West and in the United States, because they see the world in terms of strength and weakness, and they see the United States as weak right now. So this is the time when we're going to see more jihad. That's one thing. The other thing was, what about the people there who have worked with the Americans? They're all in big trouble. They are very likely to be killed outright by the Taliban, because the Taliban, once again, operating on the basis of Islamic law, if you ally against an Islamic group, if you ally with infidels against Muslims, then you are an enemy of Allah and to be killed. There's no discussion about it.
What about in terms of the situation there? So the military, the U.S. military, at least the ones that are still there, have their hands full trying to secure the airport for a significant period of time.
How big is Kabul Airport? Do you know? I mean, is it like a 1 square mile? Or, I mean, where
are
all these?
I don't know how big it is. I mean, obviously, it's a functioning international airport.
But they've got all our military in. Well, they've been being rushed by civilians, people climbing on planes. They've got that going on. Apparently, the Taliban, now this is according to Catherine Herridge from ABC, the Taliban is outside. The U.S. troops are trying to push all the people out of the airport. The Taliban's trying to push them there. I'm no military.
Which way are the Taliban pushing?
Trying to keep them in. Now, I've seen different things of that. But I'm no military strategist. But if I'm the Taliban, the United States is clearly operating from a position of weakness. I would just take over the airport and take all of those people hostage. I mean, what do you think the likelihood of, like, things really deteriorating is?
Oh, I think something like that is very possible. The only difficulty for that is that every time the United States forces have actually fought the Taliban in actual military combat, then the Taliban loses badly. And so it's going to be tough for them to take the airport if the Americans are there. The problem in Afghanistan was rules of engagement that made it virtually impossible to fight, and also the lingering popular support that the Taliban had among the people, so that it became a group that was essentially impossible to eradicate. But I don't know that they're going to take the airport, but yes, you're absolutely right. If they do take the airport by some chance, then the people there will be taken hostage or killed or who knows what. This is something also operating according to Islamic law, that when you have infidels that you capture, you can kill them, enslave them, imprison them, or ransom them, if depending on what is best for Islam at the moment.
Wait a minute. Every once in a while, we have to identify our guest.
Okay.
We've got Robert Spencer, head of Jihad Watch, and one of the great minds about the Middle East.
What about then? So the State Department. Okay, you're right. The State Department, in its infinite wisdom, yesterday first told everybody over the weekend to go to the airport. Then they said, "Oh wait, don't come to the airport. Hide in place and fill out your repatriation assistance request forms." And now, where are you supposed to send that? I have no idea. It's like, so what about those Americans, or the people who have American citizens, who, and apparently there are thousands of them there, right? They're screwed, it seems to me. They're hiding in place in their homes.
Sheltering in place, Julie.
To get their computer to print out the repatriation assistance request form. What happens to them? I mean, if you were them, would you say, hey, the Taliban says we can go to the airport now, let's go, even though you have to pass the checkpoints? I mean, how much danger are those people in?
They're in immense danger. It can't be overstated. And if I were one of them, I would be trying to get to the airport, yes, trying to get into the queue. But maybe I would just resign myself to my fate because it's going to be virtually impossible, especially in light of the fact that Pentagon spokesman John Kirby just announced today that the American forces at the airport are not going to prioritize Americans getting out of Afghanistan. We're going to bring a bunch of Afghans over here. He says we're bringing in the SIV applicants, that is the special immigrant visa applicants, people who are friends of the United States, allies of the United States, interpreters, things like that. But he said, we will sort them out later on. So in other words, they're just going to grab a whole lot of Afghans and bring them first.
Well, there you go.
Well, that seems like a good idea.
They'll fit in very well in Chicago. They know a little bit about being in war zones.
So we don't even, let's see. Okay, so I'm going to read you. I've got a lot of comments. This is from Charlene. Who gets the poppy fields and rare minerals mining? Remember when Trump was talking to Spain by the neocons so China wouldn't get control of the rare minerals? What else does Afghan export? I understand. My understanding is that's why China's like being friends with them, right? They got the opium. They got the rare minerals.
I don't think they want the opium, but they do want the rare minerals.
Yeah, China's going to get all that, no doubt about it. And that's why the Taliban, as I noted, has agreed not to aid the Uyghurs, who are Islamic jihadis, who they ought to be aiding. But you do what you have to do, and you don't go up against a force you can't beat. And so they're making an accord with China in this regard.
Now, and Joe Biden in his speech was calling on the Taliban and demanding that they, you know, continue to respect human rights and things like that. Because we've done interviews with you before, so I've become educated. The Taliban has a little bit different view of human rights than maybe your soccer mom in suburban Chicago, right?
Yeah, a little bit different. This is a jihad group. They want Islamic law. Islamic law institutionalizes discrimination against women and non-Muslims, denies the freedom of speech, so many other things. It's deeply, inveterately anti-Semitic. And all these things they consider to be the law of Allah, the immutable law of the one true God. And consequently, they think that is human rights. That is the way the world ought to be ordered. So they say, yes, of course, we're for human rights. And the Americans go away and think they're going to protect women's rights, when actually that's not what they mean by human rights at all.
Well, and what about even not just women? I know what the U.S. Embassy was flying the gay pride flag over in Afghanistan. That probably has to come down, too.
That'll stay up, won't it?
Yeah, that's going to come down, absolutely. And so are the gays themselves from the top of tall building.
Yes. And what about the average person? I mean, to help us understand how the Taliban, I mean, what life in Afghanistan is going to work. And I'm not trying to get into a debate about whether we should or shouldn't have stayed. I think right now the whole point is how we got out. And just because to me, it just seems like we just abandoned a friend, neutral people, foe. I mean, we just like, boom. And I think those people are in an incredibly dangerous, precarious situation. And we look at the chaos going on there now. I think it's only going to get uglier, isn't it?
Oh, there's no doubt about it, yeah. I'm all for getting out. I don't think that it's our responsibility to make sure that every country has good government. The Afghan people want the Taliban. They got the Taliban. They're going to have Islamic law. It's going to be strict. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be inhumane because that's what Sharia is. And so is that our responsibility? No. The responsibility of the President of the United States ought to be to protect Americans. And so he should be making sure that the Taliban can't export its jihad like it did on September 11, 2001. And that should be the extent of his interest in Afghanistan. And so I hope that that's the priority going forward. But I know that our generals are doing their nails and such, and they're too busy to care about that sort of thing. So probably it's not going to work out that well.
We have all those white supremacists running around, the domestic terrorists,
we
got to ban us from YouTube. Yeah. Well, what about in terms of then the terror threat? Because it seems to me that the United States, in this case in particular, as you pointed out, significantly underestimated the sneakiness and the strategic thinking of the Taliban. I got to imagine that somebody in the Taliban before this morning was thinking, hey, let's start thinking of some tarot spots. I mean, I would imagine.
Or let's have some people we call interpreters then go back to America free, and then they can sow a little confusion.
Yeah, it would be so easy. Nothing would be easier than for some of those prisoners from Al-Qaeda and ISIS that they just freed to get on those planes, since the Americans have said, we're going to bring Afghans over here, 30,000 Afghans over here, and we're going to figure them out who they are later. And who knows how many ISIS and Al-Qaeda jihadis the Biden administration is going to bring here now.
Well, but fortunately, you know, like I said, we're going to make sure all the military guys are getting vaccinated. I wonder if they're going to make sure those Afghan people are vaccinated before they get off the planes, too.
That's cool,
I'm sorry. they're not going to do it. Well, you know, it seems to me, like I said, we've had you on the show numerous times, and the American politicians seem to constantly fail to understand what the Taliban is about, what the Sharia law is about. And, you know, you're considered Islamophobic if you say anything at all. If you say, well, they're chanting death to America, but they're very friendly, you know.
Very friendly.
If you say, you know, I wonder if they mean that.
It's generally a peaceful protest.
And you got to wonder what would have happened to that reporter if she took the hijab off while she was standing there and said
not a head very long.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that's my question. And she said to the guy, no, I'm not going to go stand over there. I mean, what would they have said? Okay, well, cool. We're just not going to watch CNN anymore. I mean,
well, you know, they're counting on their submission, and I think they can count on it. CNN's never going to report anything about the Taliban in any accurate way. And if they do, they'll make sure to bring in some moderate Muslim spokesman so that people don't get the idea that there's anything wrong with Islam. So they own CNN, essentially. They don't have to worry about it.
Where do you see things, and I guess, again, another two-part question, the next few days and maybe the next few months, how do you see this unfolding? I mean, will we get everybody?
I mean, how long do you think somebody else tests the United States?
Well, yeah, there's that.
There's going to be a lot of testing in the next few months, a lot. And it's going to be in the United States. It's going to be in the area of Afghanistan. You're going to see increasing jihad activity. Hamas issued a statement. They're delighted about how the Taliban defeated the United States, they say, and it shows, it gives hope, they said, to oppressed people, so-called, everywhere. It shows them that they can defeat the United States with all its military might. So we're going to see jihad groups trying to affect that, testing those limits. And we're going to see a lot of that.
You know, I know for a while when I was in a different story, but it involved a guy from Saudi Arabia. And while I was, and I won't get into all of that, but in covering that, I started following various, essentially, jihadi Twitter accounts, right? And their view of things is very, I mean, I would imagine they're, you know, here in the United States, we're tweeting, you know, Biden blundered, it's a debacle, he's refusing to accept blame. But they're not seeing it that way. They see this as a complete victory and show of strength and demonstration that they're strong.
Why wouldn't they? That's what it was.
Well,
yeah.
They're not looking at this as Biden blundered, I would imagine. I mean, this has got to be an enormous recruiting tool for them.
Oh, it's enormous, yeah. This is a victory for the global jihad, not just for the Taliban. And the global jihadis are already talking about it that way. And with the victory comes a new boldness, and that's why the world is going to be a lot more dangerous in the near future.
And I would imagine Israel will be interesting. I mean, right now they have a president who is really pretty far right, but the coalition that he's part of is pretty far left. But I imagine they're in for some trying times themselves.
Yeah, there's no doubt, because also emboldened is Iran. Remember that we saw some of the American weaponry being carried from Afghanistan into Iran. And so we probably haven't seen the last of all that either.
How stupid was it for the United States to leave all of that? I mean, I've seen some of the pictures of the jihadi guys, the Taliban, with all the pictures of the missiles, the jeeps, the equipment left behind. I can't even imagine why we would have left that stuff behind. But
we're in a hurry.
But they have the Afghan army showing them how to use it. I mean, these guys are they're not going to be riding around so much longer, I would think, in Toyota pickup trucks with, you know, machine guns kind of welded onto the back, or guns there.
Well, yeah, see, they took all that material because it was right there for the taking, and because the Americans had made no efforts to secure it, because the American military was too busy being woke than to make adequate exit preparations. And so now we have armed the Taliban, and they're going to be using that weaponry against the United States and against our allies.
Well, what about, speaking of our allies, I mean, in the past few years, I think we've seen increasing Muslim populations in various European countries. How does this impact all of that?
Well, there are jihadis among them, too. The Islamic State called for Muslims to jihadis to infiltrate the refugee streams into Europe as far back as 2015. And they've been doing it. There have been jihad attacks there. The massacres in Paris a few years back were all Muslim migrants who had just arrived in Europe as refugees the month before. And so this kind of thing is only going to increase. As you increase the Muslim population without vetting who they are, you're going to bring in a certain number of jihadis, and those jihadis are going to act.
Well, moreover, it seems the second generation, even if the parents were moderate Muslims, they don't necessarily become pro-Western moderate Muslims themselves.
No, you're absolutely right. That's a very important point, because what happens is they go to school in France or Germany or wherever, and they get taught about multiculturalism and how they have to love their own culture and their own identity and not that of the nation in which they live. And so they think, oh, well, I should embrace Islam and learn more about Islam and become more devout, and they end up becoming jihadis.
What about, I guess, if you, I mean, what do we do? I mean,
what's our best strategy right now?
I mean, it seems like.
It doesn't seem particularly.
Should we just pretend that, like, be like Joe Biden, just all go back on vacation and say, oh, well,
let's go to.
That didn't work out well. I mean, what do we do?
He thought it worked out great. Well, he's proud of everything he did.
Well, if we had a serious president, he should seal the border, or she should seal the border with Mexico, stop all flights in, no Afghan refugees. We don't know who these people are, and we have to protect the United States first. Prioritize getting the Americans out, and then maybe on a case-by-case basis we can examine these Afghans, but otherwise we have to take care of our own national security. Quarantine Afghanistan with our remaining forces in the region and make sure that it can't export its jihad, and make sure that that the world understands that this debacle was a one-off that is not going to be repeated, and America is going to be returning to its former position of strength by deeds and not just words.
Well, as one person, Sandra, said that couple weeks ago, Joe Biden begged OPEC to increase production because Americans are entitled to abundant supply of energy. Apparently, OPEC has just indicated, not so much, Joe.
We're into profits.
We're not into taking your little dictates. So no increase in oil, but keep on cutting off your own oil supplies so the prices keep on ratcheting up.
It's just incredible. You know, if you had a group of people who want to destroy the United States and you put them in power, what would they be doing any different from what Joe Biden and his people are doing?
Good point. Well, final question for you, Robert. Just any other thoughts or things
from
me? Any other thoughts or things that we should be watching for?
Well, there's going to, I guess we've already touched on it, but there is going to be more jihad activity in the United States as a result of this. Remember, years ago, Osama bin Laden said that the world will back the strong horse and they'll see the jihadis are the strong horse and America is the weak horse. And that's never been more true than it is now.
Do you see any retribution in the United States on its intelligence agencies who have been advising Biden, but so awfully? I mean, Biden.
No, I don't think there's going to be any accountability for them.
Okay, good.
Because all the people that would hold them accountable hold to their point of view. It's all one big, nasty leftist establishment. And so who's going to hold them to account? The Senate? The House? Nobody. What we need is a thorough house cleaning of both parties in Washington, but that's not on the horizon.
We're working
on our invitation to Obama's 61st birthday. Robert, you've been great. You always are great. It's wonderful to talk to you. It's Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch. That's where people can get you. Is that site Jihad Watch?
Yeah, that's right. And on Twitter at Jihad Watch RS.
All right, sir. Great. I'm sure we'll stay in touch. Thank you for your time today. Sure appreciate it.
Thank you. Pleasure.
All right. Thank you, Robert Spencer there. Hey, we'll open it up for questions, for comments now, too. And we'll read some of the ones we're getting here on the Zoom call. But 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. If you want to watch us on Zoom, you just go to zoom.us. And the meeting number there is 209-576-423. We've got Ben saying everyone is blaming Biden, but what did you expect when you elect an idiot?
We didn't elect one.
We didn't. He's been an idiot all his life. The real person or persons to blame for the failures on the southern border and foreign policies is John Roberts and the Supremes because they refused to hear the Texas case. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. And Charlene, China and Russia together are making the USA look weak on the world stage. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think when, again, watching the president's speech, even CNN is taking him to task. I wrote down what Jake Tapper said. He said Biden didn't get into or accept any blame for the catastrophic exit that we've been watching on TV. And he didn't. He just said, well, it was a good idea to get out. It's like, okay, we're not arguing about that.
He said the buck stops here and I did a great job.
And even I could have forgotten, you know, if you're going to get out like that, it seems to me that one, you wouldn't want to announce to the jihadis and the Taliban, here's a date, we're going to do it. And number two, you would just be quietly moving people did you see the Washington Post? All the reporters are writing a letter to the State Department saying, hey, hello, we got some 200 journalists here. Can you help us get out? And the State Department
they should do is leave the Washington Post Department in Afghanistan permanently. They can find a new journalism thing there. They can start a new post
they're used to being puppets of the Kabul, state
the Kabul Post or something.
But it seems to me that it's just sitting here reading about the developments. If I, let's say, were on vacation in Afghanistan, I would have said, Chuck, I think maybe we should just leave a little bit early. Things seem to be deteriorating. And I thought, just what gall. They're showing the people clinging to the planes, and there have been, eight people killed at the airport, at least so far that we know about. And they're like, man, we got to get our reporters out. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay.
That we need to bring back our very own insurrectionist from
The State Department's going to be, oh, okay, guys, we'll just leave all the citizens, and the people are risking death, actually, by being there. Yeah. You all could have gotten out sooner. So I mean, it's just ridiculous. And Charlene says, how do we know if it's domestic terrorists or jihad terrorists? Yeah, I guess we'll wait for the FBI to tell us. There you go, Charlene.
Yeah, we'll send the FBI on.
Well, let me show, I want to say something else.
Any more clips?
We do. Okay. What Robert was talking about, there was an interesting interview with a Taliban commander where he kind of explains really what they're about. And they're not about peacekeeping missions,
really?
At least not what we would consider to be a peacekeeping mission. So could we please, Robert, play the Taliban commander soundbite?
It's our belief that one day Mujahideen will have victory and Islamic law will come not to just Afghanistan, but all over the world. We are not in a hurry. We believe it will come one day. Jihad will not end until the last day.
So that's the thing, right? They're not saying, no, we're going to let women go to school. And that is why I think Robert Spencer is absolutely right. We don't need to go back into Afghanistan. We don't need to try to take over Syria. But what we do need to do is secure our borders.
No.
We need to make sure that we know coming into this country. We need to have a competent, not corrupt FBI that can track them when they're here domestically. We need to have competent, not corrupt and woke military and intelligence gathering organizations overseas so we can figure out what's going on. It just seems to me they're so busy. The left is being woke and being, you know, making sure that everyone's getting vaccinated or kicked out, or being sure that, you know, you're the Pentagon and you need to crack down on the white supremacist insurrection at the Capitol. It's like, I'm sorry, but you should have been paying a little bit more attention to what was going on under your command, I think.
They're not going to, and they'll be happy. And Democrats control the House and Senate and the presidency. So certainly, since the president believes he did a great job, a little timing questions, but that always happens. And so that's it. I mean, it'll go from bad to worse to worse. You know, at least when you had Reagan and they and they backed out of Lebanon. They were invading a small country in between time. Right now, Biden's not thinking, well, how do I show resolve to the world? He just got that over with.
And this from Jacob. He says, yesterday, August 15th, was the 76th anniversary of Japan surrendering to the United States. My, how things have changed. Oh, there you are going to anti-Asian. So we have, I guess, Bob on line two. Hey, Bob. Thank you for calling the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, Chuck and Julie, it's the first time I ever called you. I hate to call you under these circumstances. What a disaster, huh?
Absolutely. Where do you live, Bob?
I live in Arvada here. So, yeah, I've been a big fan of yours for many years. The first time I've ever called in. I guess it took a dark day to prompt me to call you. But a question I had, and I just wanted to put this thought out here, is, you know, I very much remember vividly the Iranian hostage crisis of 1979 to 1980. Are the Taliban going to use the Americans over there for fodder, for blackmail, and parade them around and humiliate us on their television? I just see a lot of potential for some bad stuff here.
You're absolutely right, Bob. I mean, right now, it's about as good as it's going to get, i.e. the Taliban is kind of, you guys can stay at the airport. We won't shoot down any of your planes. But you can imagine their discussions within the Taliban and which approach to take. And a few of them are going, well, we take like 1,000 hostages and trade them for $100 million or $10 billion or, you know, do an Iran deal. It's right now, it's right on the line, and we really are depending upon the goodwill of the Taliban, which is not the best place to be.
Well, yeah, and Bob, I can tell you this, we had Robert Spencer from Jihad Watch on saying he predicts that that will start happening.
Fox News, very possibly.
Okay, KT McFarland, former Trump administration person, said it's going to happen. She said, of course, they're going to start doing that. I mean, let's take a look at the situation. Afghanistan had... And I'm sure. Apparently, the president flew away with a helicopter full of cash, which I can't really blame him for. But there is money. There is, you know, there are assets that belong to Afghanistan. And I'm not sure how easy it would be for the international community to seize some of those things.
No, I'm not doing that.
Well, I imagine. I mean, that's what you're thinking. So my guess would be, Robert, that those people may not be. Like hostages in a prison cell tied to the wall right now. But to a certain extent, I suspect they are de facto hostages because as long as they're there, the international community can't really do too much to the Taliban. So that's my thought anyway.
You know, it's going to be interesting because, I mean, I see a lot of propaganda potential to this, parading the prisoners, I mean, just showing their power. And, I mean, it was amazing that they instructed these people to shelter in place. I mean, my first notion in that situation is get the heck out of there. Get out of there.
Right.
Shelter.
Right. Well, and then the ridiculousness of telling them, they're like, okay, so the embassy's gone. They burned everything. The flag is gone. The ambassador, of course, got out safely. And they're telling these people, I'm not kidding, it was an email that they sent to start filling out their repatriation assistance request forms. Sent to who, right? I mean, you're seeing all these things on Twitter and the social media, people who are still in Afghanistan, their families here in the United States, frantically calling everybody, trying to figure out how to get them out. And they're like, the airport, I guess, is open briefly now. I mean, the Taliban controls the roads in and out. You know, there's no one's getting out unless the Taliban allows them out right now.
Yeah, I don't see them allowing them out. I mean, there's just so much blackmail potential here. And, they can really milk this for a ton of propaganda value and a lot of cash that they desperately need. It's horrible. It's just unbelievable that that they didn't plan this out at all. It's just staggering to me.
Yes,
but
I agree.
Luckily, Joe Biden is headed back.
He's headed back on vacation.
To Camp David to relax. You know, he gave a speech it's I'm dying to see how the polls come out about him, but who knows. Bob, thanks so much for calling. First time.
Call anytime. More. That's right.
Hey, I really enjoy your show. I'll be listening in for the rest of the program. Thanks. It was a real pleasure talking with you, Chuck and Julie.
Talking to
great
you.
To meet
likewise.
You.
All right, then this from Jack. The so-called press conference today, the installed figurehead, after having reporters pre-approved to ask questions at the press conference, refused to take questions after trying to justify his incompetence for the orderly withdrawal of the military and civilian personnel from Afghanistan. Actually, and what's interesting is he has sent more troops back to Afghanistan than he removed. too, which is kind of funny, is he's giving himself credit for getting troops out of Afghanistan, now has more there than when we started. But, you know, this is from Mark. Biden, Kamala, and the White House staff, including the Joint Chiefs of Staff, this is a good point, Mark, should all be flown to Kabul and parachuted in as the U.S. response.
Yeah, and parachuted like they gave the Afghans parachutes to get off those planes.
That's right. Well, and speaking of that, if you guys haven't seen, there's one more piece of video I want to play. You know, it's one thing I have to acknowledge for us to be sitting here, you know, in Westminster, Colorado, talking about this. But can you imagine for both the American citizens, the Afghan citizens who have helped the American military? I mean, there are reports
they
now that
probably
the Taliban
have fairly high stress levels.
Yeah, the Taliban is reportedly going to door to door, has a list of people. So you got to ask yourself, where did they get that list so quick? What were they burning at the embassy, or how'd they get this list of all the helpers, right? And there was one woman was saying that they came looking for her husband, all the men in her family. Mm. You know, things are going to be
sure
ugly.
I'd shelter in place.
But so you can't blame. I guess what I'm going is I don't blame these people for going to the airport. And at least there's citizens.
Well, it's hard to identify at the airport elsewhere, you know.
They're
coming to your house.
Some military people, and you've got the U.S. military trying to keep them out. They're trying to get in. But if we could just play, this is just chilling video, the airport video, please, Thomas.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, look. And you've all seen the video. Oh, here are your gunshots here. Yeah. No.
Whoa.
So you can't blame the people. And again, this is all Joe Biden refuses. It's squarely on him. This could have been what happened, you know, in the next few days. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, they were saying, oh, it's going to be 90 days or so before anything happens. I mean, it happened before they even knew that it was happening. Anyone could. I mean, I think anyone could have predicted that this was happening. You were watching the Taliban move, right? At some point, Biden should have said, you know, maybe we should just leave a few people behind at an airbase. Because from what I understand, the reason it hasn't happened before as we've drawn down the troops is that they have left some people in place there to kind of, you know, to keep the lights on, so to speak, until everyone was gone. And here they just, boom. And the Taliban knew that. The Taliban had been planning for that. It was their country. They had the alliances that they were forming with other people, which, I mean, you read about all these columnists are reporting on that. You got to wonder why the military, you know, generals didn't know it.
But I love that one about OPEC.
Where
Biden publicly begs them, saying, hey, you know, we need oil. We're having trouble with oil. Could you just please, you know, increase production and OPEC it now?
Well, let me go to something bigger. And we've got a few minutes left, or broader, I guess. What do you think happens to Joe Biden? I mean, I think you got to wonder, because so he stayed on vacation. He's kind of under pressure. He comes back, makes a speech. As Jacob says, the second half was just a repeat of the first half. It's a horrible speech. I mean, even CNN didn't really like the speech. And then he goes back on vacation. That does not seem to me to be evidence of a leader who cares about what's going on, or who cares what we think about it. Do you
All right, let's go to Charlene on line two. Charlene, what do you think?
Oh, hi there. Yes.
Hi.
You remember when Biden said it's going to take F-15s and nukes to take on the federal government? You know, when he told people in America that.
Right.
Well, so does the Taliban have nukes and F-15s? I mean, other than what they've just confiscated,
you know,
they
I
may have.
The same thing today. Thought the same thing today.
Exactly. So that tells me there's power behind the Taliban. The Taliban, you know, they've got their own agenda, of course, but then there's some big players on the world stage that are using the Taliban. And furthermore, you know, they all have embassies still in Afghanistan, China, India, Russia,
and
Pakistan. And, you know, if we were all civilized nations fighting against this ragtag terrorist group, they should allow those evacuees into their embassies for protection.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they could be escorted out. So
I could just do that phone call, Charlene.
The one safe place you'd want to go, I'd head to the China embassy.
Right,
you know that one's safe.
It's a joke, but I can call Putin and say,
it's better than holding onto the side of an airplane and being dropped off.
Charlene, what do you think? How do you think the Chinese would react to a bunch of Afghanistan people or Americans?
Washington Post reporters.
Yeah, Washington Post reporters storming the Chinese embassy. You think they take them in and offer them some lunch or something?
Well,
or,
but what I'm saying, that just refutes the point that that these are ragtag terrorists. Because if they were, if they didn't get support from these big players on the world stage, they would be assisting these tortured Afghanis that are going to be tortured by the Taliban.
Right.
That Russia, China, Pakistan, and India don't consider them ragtag terrorists.
No.
They consider them, people that own that country and want to take it back. But, I mean,
I think they
probably consider them partners to a certain degree, or at least
exactly. It's not U.S. against the Taliban.
No.
It's U.S. against these big major players. I think,
on Twitter,
and that's why I think they double crossed Biden. I think they told Biden, "You got to get out, and we're going to keep the minerals, and you might get the poppy fields." Biden thought he had more time, and they said, "No, we'll pull one on you, and you will lose face on the world stage."
Well, that's it. Biden didn't lose face, as far as he's concerned.
What do you think?
He did a bang up job. The buck stops with him, and he couldn't have done better. You know, he got us out,
What do you think happens with him, Charlene? So we got the southern border, inflation. You got COVID. Now we've got this. Is he seriously weakened, or will the press next week go back to just giving him a pass on everything?
The press will give him a pass, but I think. I think there's some powerful, countries out there that want to bring down the United States, and they're doing it in a myriad of ways. And to me, it looks like Biden is helping them. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he's not keeping us strong, that's for sure. So, anyway, I just wanted to throw in my two cents worth.
All right, we appreciate it as always, Charlene.
As Biden's statement was, America's back.
Back to what? Exactly.
To what? All right,
hey,
Julie.
We've got Tom Tancredo had a great column in America Citizen Press. We're going to have him on talking about Afghanistan. He's going right straight to Charlene's point, is America next? And he's got some good points that we'll talk to him about on Wednesday. Thank you to Robert Spencer. Thank you to everybody listening on Zoom. We love having you guys there, and everybody listening anyway. If you miss any of the shows, remember you can always go to chuckandjulie.com. You can click on Listen Live there, or you can listen later. And also, thank you to the great guys at BBS.
And we'll see you on Wednesday. See what the world turns in.
Yeah. Bye, guys.